I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Story Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 20. I am just thrilled to welcome the Parsons, John and Caroline Parsons. For the last 20 years or so, I've known you. That's how long I've known you.
It's hard to believe. Somewhere like that. It certainly is.
Because the show we're going to talk about tonight, Spoon River Anthology, is 18 years ago, believe it or not. But let me just briefly, our audience needs to hear a little bit more about you. This, I'm taking this from the program, Spoon River Anthology, and but it's still so applicable, I'm going to just simply read it. John and Caroline Parsons live in Caroline's old family home place in Grays Creek, North Carolina. They have been together, singing together, since they were married in Colorado in 1987. Caroline was born and raised in Charleston, South Carolina, while John is from Southern California. Their music has carried them all over America and has included performances in schools, festivals, live radio, television, and film. And now podcasts. There was no such thing as a podcast 18 years ago.
No.
Now, Caroline, we have just been listening to our wonderful theme music. Longing to Be on Old Broadway by Cole Porter. Yeah. Caroline, if you could be on Broadway or somewhere in Manhattan,
Grand Ole Opry,
what would you and John be doing if you could just do anything you wanted? I mean, you could snap your fingers and you're there, you're singing, you're producing, you're songwriting.
Gee whiz, Lynn. There's so many things we would be doing. It's hard to pick one, but I would choose to be living in the 60s. Can we have a time warp here?
Certainly can.
Yeah, and we would be down in the places where Bob Dylan and Judy Collins and those people, and we would be hanging out with them. And now we would be old and famous because we would have been there with them and we would have, you know, gone with that group, you know, through the years. And we would be singing with those folks and performing
with them.
That would be
I am working on a way of getting us all moved back in time. During the show, I haven't talked with James about it yet. He looks rather stricken. But all I can say is I want you to faith in me with my ideas, because it really upsets me when I'm going to have to call your mother.
I knew there was a reason he bought that DeLorean.
it's truth. I do have an idea for transporting a time machine. So I want you to join me and, I guess, James, when we do that. And if you can join that crowd at that time. All right, now...
he can't operate his email. I mean, he's got a flux capacitor. He's got a flux capacitor.
Now, Caroline, you're a veteran of the our round table brunches.
Right.
And there was one of the features of our brunches at the restaurant downtown or here at the house for two or three years. We had a red box placed in front of some unfortunate... guest at our brunch, but I'm doing that again ever since we've started the podcast. So you were there, and I think even did a chime or two, so in a moment, if you would open the box and take out, and this is the truth. You have not seen what's in there, but now you do.
Lynn. Oh my gosh, it's a little Dutch boy and girl.
In ceramic.
Yeah, ceramic. And
that last part's wonderful. Pretty important. Otherwise, we just think that Lynn's kidnapped children.
Oh, yeah. No. But...
And what are they doing?
You know what they're doing? They are getting ready to come alive. And when they come alive, what we're going to discover is this is the Dutchman and this is Margaret. Did you ever hear the song, The Dutchman? It's one of the most fabulous songs in the world. And maybe before this is over, John would be willing to send us a little bit of that. But I think that if we can just find the magic wand, we could hear them singing The Dutchman. It's just a beautiful song.
Oh, well, what a lovely story. And they're moving, like they're dancing as well as singing.
I think they are. And yeah, I think they would be dancing. But we'll save the second part of this story until John Parsons gets his guitar tuned.
I'm with all for that.
Suddenly, Caroline's longing for the 60s makes much more sense to me.
Oh, you know the song, The Dutchman, right? I mean, it's just, amazing.
We'll look forward to that. Now, Caroline, yes, we are going to be talking a lot about, how about the song right now?
Okay.
All right.
Okay. We can just do a verse or something. You could just do a little bit so Lynn gets a taste of it.
But we have lots of time.
The Dutchman's not the kind of man who keeps his thumb jammed in the dam, holds his dreams in. That's a secret only Margaret knows.
Oh, that's what a nice taste that is. No, that is this is a sample of how fortunate all of us have been to have been in many of John and Caroline Parsons' dues. It's just marvelous. But we're talking now, John. Why don't you, since you're up, sit over there in that chair,
okay,
if you would. And we're going to be talking about Swoon River Anthology. I'm going through our original scrapbook, that great big old thing, and pulling these things out for this show, as well as what we do later in the evening, mm-hmm, when an archivist comes over and interviews me about the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be talking about Spoon River with him. But right now, I'm talking about it with you because don't you remember it as being just wonderful?
That was delightful. I remember reading some of that in high school, in my high school English class,
yeah,
and I didn't appreciate it. It just came alive down in the basement.
Yeah. Yeah, there were six actors, three women and three men. The director was R.J. Hynek. He's no longer living in town. I wish I knew where he was. But this is his director's notes. I think this will get us started. The beauty of Edgar Lee Masters' Spoon River Anthology is that it addresses so many levels of human emotion. Some theater critics view the anthology as a darkly cynical work and cannot understand a director's decision to focus on Masters' messages of faith in the human spirit and Christian love. Others are shocked when the focus seems to be Masters' undeniable obsession with sexuality. I have chosen not only poems of wit, insight, and metaphysical contemplation, but I have selected those that demonstrate that the human spirit is oppressed and sex becomes a sinister tool when natural human sexuality is treated as shameful and evil. The personalities presented in this play surround you every day. They may be seated to you beside you tonight. You may be one of them yourself. The beauty of Master's Spoon River Anthology is that you may now know more of their story and they of yours. So he wrote... Edgar Lee Masters wrote 244 of those. Our show had 53 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Six actors. And I was in a rehearsal with Joyce Leib last night at the Poe House because we're going to be doing, once again, Joyce and I are Mr. and Mrs. Poe. kind of an odd couple. And we were rehearsing last night. I told her that you two were coming over this evening. And I said, do you remember Spoon River? And she just went on and on and on. She remembered doing four of them. But each one of these actors, you see the sketches of the people behind you. These are the six actors that were on the stage. But your music added so much to that evening. And here I found this picture of John with a banjo.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just love John playing the banjo.
You learned it just for that show, right?
Well, not quite. While the actors were up on stage, we were jammed back in the laundry
room. In the laundry room.
Oh, yeah. In the dark. To come out at the right times.
Like a pilot light would come on. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
That water heater would come on.
Well, and it was a long show, so I...
It was.
I didn't give you bench or stools or anything?
Well, it was good. We didn't know enough to know that that was probably appropriate. So we didn't know what to ask for anything. It was great. I would never have guessed there were 53. There were that many because that sounds like a lot. But
some of them were just a minute or two.
And then we would, just for the sake of the listener, we would come out at the appropriate times and sing a song that contributed to or matched up with the reading. You know, it was a match, and it just and it was lovely. It was just wonderful.
Or a bridge from one to the other.
I remember one night I said, John, you have to come out faster. And you looked a little bit annoyed with me, and just went, oh! Playing like crazy. And sometimes directors can be a bit abrupt, but nevertheless, 53 of them. But R.J. Hynek was the director and the one who conceived this idea, and he went through, and so can you imagine plowing through 244 of these to find just the ones that were going to suit what he wanted.
Well, what he chose was really perfect and lovely. We should do that again.
I'm getting this a lot from people. They wish we would reprise some things that we've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And yes.
In the basement, too. The basement was magic. It was.
Yes, it was. True. But anyway, now I went to the library today, and I found one that I... chose one that I think just really, really suits you. And perhaps you know it. It's called Fiddler Jones. And it's a man who loves music, loves playing the fiddle. He's a farmer, but he has 40 acres, but he's evidently not very good at farming. He drops the plow at the instant he's offered, you come and play the fiddle, give us some music.
Right, that's perfect for John Parsons.
And so
be it the plow or be it the lawnmower or be it the paintbrush, and I'm right behind you.
Please forgive me for my rather inadequate reading. I just haven't had much time. Fiddler Jones, the earth keeps some vibration going there in your heart, and that is you. And if the people find you can fiddle, Why fiddle you must for all your life? What do you see, a harvest of clover, or a meadow to walk through to the river? The wind's in the corn, you rub your hands for breeves hereafter ready for market, or else you hear the rustle of skirts, like the girls when dancing at Little Grove. To Cooney Potter, a pillar of dust or whirling leaves meant ruinous drought. They looked to me like red, to him, they looked to him like redhead Sammy stepping it off to Turalura. How could I till my 40 acres, not to speak or getting more? With medley of horns, bassoons, and piccolos, stirred in my brain by crows and robins, and the creak of a windmill, only these? And I never started to plow in my life. that someone did not stop in the road and take me away to a dance or picnic. I ended up with 40 acres. I ended up with broken fiddle and a broken laugh and 1,000 memories and not a single regret.
Ah. Thank you.
Doesn't that suit your life?
It feels like it. I have actually heard somebody adapt it.
Oh really?
To a song, and I didn't know where the story came from, and they took a lot of liberties with it. But I wondered where that came from.
All this, I guess, in public domain, so that's be an inexpensive thing for us to do if we wanted to reprise it. So Spoon River was a great, great evening, and here are photos of course, we can't, on radio, it's difficult, of course, but you could look at them later. But here's René Minifee, the wonderful black actor who remembered that one night he threw this knife onto the stage and cut his hand, blood all over. Then Joyce was trying to remember all four that she did last night when we were talking about it.
Oh, I wouldn't recognize her in these pictures.
Let's not go through anymore. Mm-hmm. I wish we were on Skype or something so we could show these. But anyway, so Spoon River was one of my top five shows. We've done 120 now at the Gilbert, and this is right up the top there. Through the years, you probably noticed that I love doing evenings of monologues and, mm-hmm. and one-person shows. We did a lot of those under my aegis. Anything else we want to say about Spoon River?
I think that, just we should bring it back. That would be my thing. We should just do it again.
I'll say this. I know where RJ is.
You do?
Oh,
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Is he still in North Carolina?
Yeah, he's up in Raleigh. Yeah. Uh-huh. But I haven't been in touch with him for a while, but I keep up with where his job changes and all, and he's still that same. It'd be interesting to get his take, what, you know, to basically 20 years later.
Right,
because he's
yes.
a much older man. He yeah. was a fairly young man.
Yes, right.
We yeah. all were younger.
We were all younger.
But he was not only younger, he was young.
Right. Well, I'll get his number and call him and tell him what's going on here. So now, Caroline, you and I mm-hmm. started talking about theater. We just the Gilbert just closed for Young Frankenstein the musical, and we have at least one musical a year down there. Mm-hmm. And really, it was doing from Cabaret to The Assassins to something like silly like Young Frankenstein, but hilarious and fun. Mm-hmm. But then we most of any season around the country, these are legitimate plays, and the only time you hear any kind of music is when people are gathering, in the lobby, and so pre-show music and so on. But we were talking about, why don't we be kind of pioneers in Humboldt, my home county, in Contra Costa, that's another county. All right, talk about age showing itself. All right, what's the name of our county? Cumberland County. it's just getting more pathetic. Anyway, in Cumberland County, where some of our plays could have some music with them, not just before or after, but during. You had some thoughts on that.
Well, yeah. As we talked, you were sort of painting a picture of how would you bring music, and how could it enhance a play that wasn't written with music as part of it. It wasn't a musical, and I just think music is such an emotional thing. I have heard more than once that music is a thing that people can close out ideas and they can shut off conversations so that they don't listen, they don't hear what you're saying. But music is it has a quality that people can't shut out, and I think if you had a particular moment with not a full song, but a verse and a chorus, or just a little complete piece of music that enhanced what was happening on stage.
It could be simultaneous, yeah, instrumental.
It could be simultaneous time,
or between
statements on the stage.
Right, yeah, yes, call them those beats and so on. There's all kinds of possibilities. Yeah. And you took home the next play that Gilbert's doing is A Christmas Story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean it's a wonderful life. It's a wonderful life.
Uh-huh.
And everyone knows the movie. Mm-hmm. And we did for 10 years. We did A Christmas Carol, mm-hmm. but then this year, Robin Parrish, the new artistic director, is going to do A Wonderful Life. And you took the script home. Did you just? You didn't have much time, but did anything occur to you?
Well, what occurred to me was a song I'm writing already, uh-huh. trying to finish. And I could just see a few places in the script. It would take a lot more time to go through it again, you know, really slowly.
Surely.
But there's a song. Can I give you an example of what I'm talking about? There's a song. It's about a young Hispanic woman that I happen to meet here in America. And say you had a play about immigrants.
Yes.
And you were at a scene where this young girl is being spoken to by an older woman, American woman, and she's saying, "So what is your name? Come on, speak up. Cat got your tongue, you know, what is your name?" And the little girl is frozen, you know, or the young woman is frozen, and from somewhere you hear this thing that goes, "My name is Lucia, but you must call me Lucy. My name is Lucia, but you must call me Lucy. If they see who I am, they'll take me away, Senora. My name is Lucia, but you must call me Lucy." And then maybe the little girl would just barely say,
yes,
Lucy. You know, but there's a young girl who has a whole name and mm-hmm. family and world she's left behind,
yes,
you know, and now she has to be.
No, I can see that in a certain play.
So
there's nothing being spoken on the stage, just perhaps the girl sitting there. Mm-hmm. You know, there are all kinds of opportunities. Now, I love harmonica, and I can see the harmonica being used in A Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Myself, just without even trying to find places for it.
But, absolutely.
John, any ideas on this topic of?
I actually wrote incidental music for a play once, and it completely opened my eyes to the. I had to go to a few rehearsals to really get the idea of where the opportunity was, because just reading the script, I was stumped. But once I got and saw and I actually loved it. I really have a lot of writer's block issues, but once I got in the room with the actors, it was just the stuff really came out. And it was instrumental. It was completely incidental in between, you know, set changes. There were a couple of those actually in the flow. It wasn't just set changes. There were some beats to fill, if you ever have anything you want to try, I would love to do that, because it was very, very rewarding, and I think it added. And I was really struggling to start, but once I got into it, I do think it added. And I mean, less is always more in that situation.
Yes.
It doesn't take much.
Right. And what instrument were you?
I think I did mostly guitar and bass, and maybe a little resonator guitar, but it was very understated.
Uh-huh.
It was a pretty dark play. I can't remember what it was. I think it was Orphans was what it was called.
Oh, I see.
But it was a dark play.
Well, so we're going to present this to Robin Parrish and see how possibly we can include music in at least one or more of the season's plays this coming year. So, you know, something I forgot to mention in Spoon River. Now, what Edward Lee Master did, he went to this graveyard in Spoon River and read the tombstones. And all of those 244 poems are real people. And he wrote those poems about each one of those people. Anyway, so, all right. Now, Caroline, I think you're going to sing a song for us.
Oh, sure. Yes.
unless you had anything more to add about the music for plays.
No, I just think it's a great idea, and I'll share that script with John when we get
home.
All
right, okay.
And if we, either of us or both of us together, have some ideas, we'll. But I mean, it's a fabulous.
I can't imagine it'd be any objection to it, but we'll certainly pursue that. So ordinarily at this point we have our actors give a monologue or a Shakespearean sonnet, but I've asked you to sing one of my favorite songs, an original of yours, called String of Pearls.
Ah, is that the that's it?
That's the correct title.
Well, no, actually, silly me, I wrote it. I'm not much on...
China Girl.
Yeah, thank you, John. So glad you're here.
Men have their uses.
Oh, most definitely.
Did you want to tell the story behind it, or just go right to it?
I could do that. I could let you know that it was when I was in high school, I wanted more than anything a string of pearls. My father worked on the railroad, and my mother was a school teacher, and that was just not in the cards at that time in my life. But, oh boy, did I ever want them. And so when my mother became very ill, and just not long before she passed away, I was in her room, and she said in the hospital, and she said to me, "You know, there's one thing I have always regretted." And I said, "What?" And she said, "I never got you that string of pearls. I meant to get that for you. I thought I would get that for you during my lifetime. And I'm so sorry." And I just said, oh no. You know, I was a silly teenager. I had no, real sense of, you gave me the best thing in the world, which was just buckets of love. I mean, you just did. So several months after she passed away, I was in Washington with some friends, old friends who had just come back from China, and we had dinner. And they put these two little presents in front of me, and I opened it up, and they had brought pearls to me from China that they bought from little girls on the street corner. Well, I immediately, in my mind, what hit me was, she did this, she did this. She found a way to, give to me those pearls. And because she was very good friends with these people also. And so I began to weep, and they began to say, "Oh, Caroline, these are seconds. These are little girls go, and they pick up these pearls by the manufactured place. And they string them together, and they make money for their families like that. And so these are not like, don't be so upset." And I didn't know how to say what it was, sure, but they were like, but we knew if you were there. We looked at them, and Stuart said, "If Caroline was here, she'd buy all of their pearls, wouldn't she?" From these little, which was a great compliment. And she said, "So we had to get them for you because you weren't here." And
why don't we sing this song?
You wrote the song.
Yeah, so I wrote this song, for them. It's just a string of pearls sold by China girls, standing in the snow. 13 years old, I wear my pearls, and I think of you. You thought of me, my friend, so true. And I say a prayer for the child girl on the other side of this big old world. I pray she'll find a friend just like you, with a heart so big and aim so true.
Many times, but it always it affects me very much.
Thank you, Lynn.
Yeah. Now we're going to do something called Free for All, and that includes Jane.
Oh, okay.
And this is where we I choose the topic, and we're going to all discuss it.
Uh-huh.
And this topic is the predilection. The way that actors and people in every walk of life have frequently a feeling like an imposter. It's called the imposter syndrome,
mm-hmm.
where you, no matter what your job is, you know, just whatever it is. You know, but being in the arts, I know that's I'm very familiar with these. That you scratch anybody very deeply, and they will confess that they'll feel like, I don't deserve this. The big one with me has always been being found out, being incompetent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does this resonate with you?
Big time.
I mean, big with time. Friends or
yes,
or
yes.
Stories you've heard. Or...
I was just out in Colorado at a songwriter's workshop in Lyons, Colorado, and that was a huge topic out there because. The majority of the people, if not all the people there, it's a very difficult thing to get up in front of people and share your heart and your talent, and not be terrified or not, you know, I think it's very prevalent. in the artist's world.
Absolutely, John.
You know, I think it goes hand in hand with being a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. You know, I know for me, I think it's that it's never good enough. You know, and it's not a competition or a contest, but it feels like you're always pushing, and it never seems to be good enough. At work, I have that imposter syndrome a lot because I am an imposter. But I think a lot of times, because we don't play, you know, we don't play 5 or 6 times a week out in public. So when it's relatively, you know, and it's 4 or 5 times a month, and you kind of can lose that edge. And it's like you're always, when you're done with a 2 or 3 hour show, you feel great. Oh, we're fine, you know. But by the next day, you're like, oh, my God, we're going to play again next weekend. And it's like you got to reconquer it again.
Yes. Uh-huh. So. Yeah. James?
It's a feeling that I think that just about anyone who's involved in and I don't even think it's limited to the arts. Just about any sort of career you have, we all have that sort of insecurity of, well, you know, I'm good at this, but I might not be as good as this as the next guy. Yeah, there's always going to be somebody who you think might be able to do it better, and maybe you just accidentally got here. I do hope that like brain surgeons don't go through that. I prefer those people be pretty confident in their abilities. But,
comfortable with their
but
role.
But this business of being found out. You know, you're going along, and you know that you're getting a lot of praise, and, mm-hmm. and you're getting a lot, and so on and so forth. And yet, you just feel like, you know, one of these days, mm-hmm. someone's going to really call me on this, mm-hmm. and I'm just going to crumble.
I have to say, my mother, as perfect and wonderful as she was, didn't help that at all in me.
Uh-oh.
Because she used to, I don't know where she got it, but my whole life, I recall her saying, honey, don't forget, it's better to be found than found. Better to be found on the back row than found out, you know, on the front row.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, it's like,
wow.
Yeah, and it was like I never. Bam. I think that, and I should have said found out for. I mean, what? What about
you know?
But
better.
Oh, you know.
No, wait. Here, I said it wrong. She said it's better to sit on the back row and be found. Then sit on the front row and be found out.
No,
that's
no,
it.
No, well, that you had said that. That sums it up, and it's also appalling that
she would say that. I don't know.
She won't even let you get up here and imagine stuff.
Think people tend to like they extend their insecurities to their children for some reason.
Yeah.
It's like you know. If your kids are acting up in public, then you know you're constantly apologizing. Oh my God, you know, don't think this is me. But
right.
That's a
good point.
And so you know, if they've got stage fright, like a good friend of mine, he's very shy when it comes to being in public situations, and so he'll if I like start talking to somebody or I start being. I guess a little too extroverted that he suddenly feels uncomfortable because he's feeling uncomfortable on my behalf.
Uh-huh. Well,
I've experienced that on stage with Caroline before.
As I say, I'm sort of a split personality too in this subject because there was my mother and that was her approach. But then my father, can we use profanity on this podcast?
Yes.
It's not a horrible.
In
context. Okay, good. Because my father, who was this amazing man who ran away from school when he was like in the fourth grade and became a water boy on the railroad and sent money home all his life to his brothers and sisters to help them get through college. He was the only one who didn't graduate from college. But anyway, he was amazing. And he had this saying that just stuck with me. That stuck with me. I would say, oh, I don't think they liked it. Or I don't think these people like me. Or when we moved, I don't think the people down here are going to at school like me. And he immediately would be, listen here, the hell with those damn people. If they don't like you, there's something wrong with them. There are so many people in this world. You just look some other direction, because the hell with those damn people. You know, if I they had hurt me, and it was wonderful.
It's wonderful. I think if parents would only be that firm on things like that, that would be.
And when I say that,
you see what he didn't do, which I see with parents playing the victim. My poor child, you know, you're being beaten up. You're being
right.
Playing the victim is nowhere. But see, this your father is giving you the ammunition to do just the opposite.
And just
that was brilliant.
He was a brilliant man. Mm-hmm. He really was in so many ways. And the anger. I mean, he was just like, you know, just.
Well, I never.
Yeah, it's like there are too many people in this world for you to be concerned about them.
Yes.
Or that.
Yeah. No, I think this is the take home for tonight's podcast, as long as a lot of other stuff. Uh-huh. But now, what we usually do now, John and Caroline, and James is so excited because it's Genesius time. We have the patron saint of theater people, actors, theater in general. When we in our free for all topics, I frequently feel we've come to an edge, and there have been, you know, very erudite or whatever, or like your dad, so right on the money. But I feel we need to contact St. Genesius. And so here's my letter to him this week. Dear St. Genesius, loving patron of the theater and its people, we seek your guidance on what appears to be a universal condition among your followers, namely the fear of being found out, found to be an imposter, one who does not deserve to be loved and respected in the world of theater and entertainment. Do you agree with me when I humbly offer the following remedy? Never miss a chance to make helpful comparisons between yourself and other theater folk. Learn to preface each biting comparison with, bless your heart, and then begin the self-confidence-destroying list of shortcomings. Soon you'll find your own personal doubts fading away. The comparison game. Try it. Perfect it. We await your guidance. Do you think this will help?
It can't hurt.
It can't hurt.
No, I just know I'm going to be walking around this house someday. I'm going to find Lynn has like a list of all my traits that he dislikes. Like, yeah, James is receding hairline. I have a beautiful hairline. Bless his heart.
Now we have, this is something that is newish to our podcast, John and Caroline. It's the listener challenge. This is a challenge we're giving to our listeners. I give a name over the air. The first one was, it was George Spelvin. Who was George Spelvin? And it went for weeks and nobody knew who it was. Somebody finally guessed, and they got a beautiful prize in the mail. This person, we have people listening, believe it or not, from all over the world, wow. England, and also Pittsburgh, PA. And this person is in Pittsburgh and got this wonderful gift, but we haven't heard from him saying how wonderful, I guess, huh? anyway, here's the new listener's challenge. Who is Eve Harrington? Who is Eve Harrington? I don't expect. I mean, if you knew it, I would not want you to say. This is for a listener challenge, and so we'll see how long it takes to get that answer back to us. Now, time for the quiz, and I hope that if Caroline, I want to turn that quiz sheet over, and James, you have a copy also, don't you?
Oh, it looks like I do.
And John and Caroline can both work on this together. Now, these are, I'm going to give you musical terms. And you are to tell me what that describes. For example, allegro. You look at this list. What is allegro? Now, first of all, James is going to keep track. He frequently has trouble keeping a score. I hope tonight he's... All right, allegro.
A number of these are just names of cars.
I think allegro is Faster, lively.
Faster, lively. Good. Number one, you got correct. All right. Staccato.
That would be short and attached.
Detached. Why don't you erase the ones in the news? That would be... just whatever you want to do. I mean, just to mark them. I'm just marking them, yeah. Forte.
That would probably be...
Loudly.
My gosh, they're ace in this game.
For people that don't read music.
Okay, a cappella.
That is without instrumental accompaniment.
Good. All right, piano.
Softly.
Crescendo.
Becoming louder.
Becoming louder, very good. Accelerando.
That's a car name. That's definitely a car.
I hope not, sure.
Getting gradually faster.
Gradually faster.
Ooh.
Adagio.
This is where I get mixed up between these two. I'm going to say adagio is... Slowly.
And lento.
That would be becoming quiet.
Very slow.
Oh.
Very good. All right, good.
Did you get diminuendo?
Oh, diminuendo. Diminuendo. Diminuendo.
That's becoming quieter.
Becoming quieter. Yeah. All right. Good. Well, you aced that. Got them all right. So here is your
that's
prize.
That's ridiculous.
here is your prize.
Oh. Look! Oh.
This is one of those handmade books with all kinds of compartments and little secret sleeves and...
Oh, how lovely! Listen, all you people out there listening, Lynn Pryor has the most fabulous presents that he gives. You better try that lady's name.
Right now.
Eve Harrington.
Eve Harrington.
We know Eve's sister, Judy. I don't know about Eve.
You're right.
But they have things that's just all handmade. It's all about the circus.
Wow.
Oh, how cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How lovely.
Now, at this point, we share memorable quotes. Now, when you were here the last time singing and performing 18 years ago, downstairs, in the laundry...
Uh-huh.
Perhaps you noticed attached to the mirror, what I used to do is I would put little quotes on 3x5 cards and tape them in the dressing room or here and there about, oh, little tips on acting or what is a beat or what this and that. And so I found the one I'm sure it's the last. We have been leaving this space for the last 13 years. And everything was here. The attic had props and costumes. Nothing was anywhere else. Well, we had really big pieces in a storage unit, but the dressing room, everything was here. And so when they wanted the rest of the lights, they were taken downtown to the new theater and so on. But I swear this is the last thing. Here it is, this ancient yellowing 3x5 card. That was, I found it in the laundry, probably right where you were standing, and standing. And it says, tell the story, tell the truth.
Mm. Who said that?
I did.
Yes.
Oh, very good.
I just did. Uh-huh. I don't think I did it for the first time. Okay, now we come to turning the tables. This is where each one of you, this is where I get break into a sweat. You get to ask me anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. And James had that look earlier this evening, which I said, I'm regretting this item in the program, I think. But who has something to ask me? Maybe I'm just too dull to ask questions of. James.
Say, you know, you've always had this lovely head of hair. Is this your natural blonde? Is this a... Is this out of a box?
All right, this is the one question I don't want to answer. No, no, of course I'm an answer. No, I had a gorgeous shock of hair that had red highlights and gold, and it was beautiful. And but fortunately, I've kept 80% of it, and John's kept 100% of his. And well, anyway, James, don't your look is good too.
but I mean, this thing you've got going on, it works for you.
Anyway, the question was, the answer is the latter. Mm-hmm. Now, people will have forgotten which was first. I spend 20 minutes a day on my appearance. I just what you see in front of you is what you get. But the hair is one thing that I have not given up on. And yes,
nope.
And James, I am grabbing for your remuneration check right now.
tear it up.
All right, John.
This is a tough one, but because you've done so many amazing things, what is the thing that you're most proud of that you've created or done?
That hair. That's what
I'm proud of. I'm very, very proud of my parenting.
Yeah.
I like to think I was and is a very good parent. Mm-hmm. And given my sexuality, it was a miracle that I became a parent. But it was something that more than anything, I wanted to be a parent growing up. And I was looking for quite a while that it wouldn't happen, but it did. And so I'm very grateful for that. And so that would be one, John. But I'm very grateful that I've lived this long so that I can really be in a place where I can live my philosophy of being truly helpful. My spiritual curriculum is A Course in Miracles, and one of the things they teach in there is that our goal always, 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 always is to be truly helpful. The key word is truly. Because people frequently say, well, I'm just trying to be helpful. Well, frequently, it's anything but. But if you can figure out, and with guidance, from divinity or whatever, figuring out what is truly helpful. So that is what my entire day, I like to think. I lie awake at night and say, how did I do yesterday? How am I going to do today? And part of that wish, that prayer is to be, no matter what it is that I'm, in the encounters that one has in a daily life, at the grocery store or wherever, that's what you can be and make a difference in people's lives. So it's not really the obvious things that perhaps you were thinking I was going to say, but I'm very proud of the theater. I'm very proud of saving this house and garden. But most of all, it's being living long enough, but living in a way that I've had such, speaking of parents, I had such a head start, particularly with my father, in this great desire of being helpful. He was one of the, all I have to do is think about how he would handle a situation, and I can just duplicate that. And so I had a real leg up on that, but I've also refined it with study and working on my spiritual side. You just can't go through life ignoring that. You can pursue a career and do this and getting things and do this. At the end of the day, it's your happiness depends on the everyday. I'm never bored. I just wake up in the morning and I have this wonderful gift of 16 or 18 hours left in front of me to make it right. Sometimes in the middle of the night I'll lecture myself, but I didn't quite do this right. And I wish now. Sometimes I will look back years, perhaps even years ago, and regret something I said or didn't say. Omission, commission. But people will say that you can still do that. You can still talk to somebody and right or ask for forgiveness. So, well,
thank you.
You're welcome.
I would say those two are some pretty special things. Yeah. It's really good to hear. Good for me to hear.
Yeah. Thank you. Caroline, do you have a question?
Well, I'm going to ask it. I since you and I talked about what this would encompass, this, the podcast, doing it would encompass, and you mentioned, you know, this question. I think John asked a question that sort of answered my question, but still, I would just say of all the people I've ever met, I mean, in this world, if I had to pick, who was the kindest, most full of love, most gentle? I just think you have there's a sense about you, Lynn, that I could come to you and tell you anything, and you would say, "Oh, honey," and we would talk it through. But you're so kind and so good, and always I have never seen any UB come from any other space. So I guess my question is, how was there a time in your life, or what? It was all those things you just talked about, wasn't it? That grew you into the person that you are today. I mean, your father's influence,
we get down on our country, but thank God for America, and we have, you know, so many opportunities. And my heart goes out to people who don't realize what the things that can come to you, not necessarily with money, but that's another whole story. But yeah, okay, yeah.
So there are a lot of people who love their country or who live in this country who aren't like you. I mean,
you're right. It's not the country
but it's your whole life that you described us.
But we do need mentors. We need a father. We need somebody, a neighbor or a great friend who can be wise and help you to see that what's really important. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, boy, what a turning the tables tonight. Now we come to any superstitions. John, Caroline, do you have any superstitions theatrically? Do you ever have anything that you wouldn't do before a show or?
Well, for me, I hate set lists. I love going for a musical performance. Uh-huh. I love just winging it.
Yeah.
But I play with people who hate that. So. Uh-huh. It's not a superstition, but I usually find that if we can just kind of go with it. It's a lot different than the theater, I would guess. But
the improv people do that.
Yeah.
So there is an aspect of it. And your concerts, your performances are always... All right, Caroline, now, book sharing, could you very briefly tell us about the book?
Yes. I have recently discovered a book actually out in Colorado. This wonderful woman, Terry Delaney, and Ellis Delaney and one other lady, Van was her first name, whatever. I was in a workshop with these women, and they were so wise. And they introduced us, as part of the workshop, to the Pomodoro, which is a red tomato in Italian. And so it is I recommend everybody go out, especially artists. I think it's particularly designed in a way that it's very helpful and effective for artists. Okay? It encompasses scheduling your day and your week and it's setting your goals.
So Pomodoro is a system of...
It's a system of scheduling, but it's a system that takes into account... Well, they did a lot of study, for example, in terms of problems that can keep you from being successful, or can cause you not to get your work done. Uh-huh. And it goes through all of this information about like how procrastination and things like that that keep us from doing our best really are we are afraid to fail, which goes back to the thing you're talking right. about, we yes. talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And so it seems to me they look at all of the mental things that keep us that back. That
stand in the way.
Yeah, that stand in the way, and they set up the schedule so that it, so that you weed out those things. Focus is a big part of it. The Pomodoro, okay, so what you do is you work with five, say, I want to practice, and it's working for me. I'm very excited about it because I've been, as a songwriter, sitting at home, twiddling my thumbs, going, I want to be a songwriter. Why can't I just sit down and write? Yeah. They go into all of those mental or personal or whatever fears you have that hold you back.
Yes.
And they set it up so that they shift your attention from the sense of fear of, what if I practice but I still don't learn this song? Or what if I write but it's not any good? And they get you focused on a time thing where you have five circles. Each one equals 5 minutes. So that's 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. And you have a clock, and you set the timer, and all of your attention goes into, okay, so what I need to do now is I need to write for this 25 minutes. And when I get done with that and the alarm goes off, I get up, I go to some other room,
I go away,
and I give my mind time to think. Uh-huh. And come back. But it's fabulous. And if you let me come back in 2 or 3 months, I'll really tell you
about
it.
Well, we'll talk more.
Because I'm learning.
It's learning. Pomodoro. Thank you, Caroline.
Uh-huh.
All right. Caroline, I'm picking up, please don't get nervous, speaking of nerves, my stopwatch.
Uh-huh.
And you have now 60 seconds to tell our listeners how you would change theater or musical theater performing in our area.
How I would change it?
Uh-huh. Or enhance it. Or improve it.
Okay.
I would Ready? Go.
Yes. I would convince, if I thought I could, City Hall to have a staff person whose job it was to be aware of all the artistic endeavors in our county and to have a fund that would publicize what's going on. I see so many good projects get started, but you can't find the money to advertise it, you know, enough so that people go around saying there's nothing to do here when there's so much talent and so much to do. And so I wish somebody would take on the chore of making sure it was very highly publicized, where you could go, what you could see, what you could hear, and so that we begin to really support the arts in this county and in our area and lift them up instead of let them continue to be a struggle, you know?
All right, 62 minutes. Beautiful. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
The Arts Council around the state and so on, we would hope that they would take that cue. Well, now we talk about birthdays, some celebrated birthdays. Harold Pinter was born on this day in 1930, Caroline.
Mm-hmm.
Jerome Robbins in 1918. John Lennon, 1940. Callboard James.
This weekend will be the last chance to catch... Oh, no, I'm sorry. The last chance to catch Man of La Mancha just happened.
On Sunday.
Actually, on the 15th, October 15th, the Temple Theater is opening with the Addams Family. That's the Temple Theater in Sanford, North Carolina.
And our Robin Parrish is in that, Caroline.
Yes, there are.
And so, and so is Mary McGee. So we're going to be all just caravanning down there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm sure we'll wonder, when was the Gilbert starting up... their Christmas show.
Well, it opens
November 27th. So you got a while.
It's a while, yeah, right. Thank you, James. Well, Caroline and John, I can't thank you enough for putting up with me this evening.
Oh, this is fun, Lynn. This is great.
And
good for you.
And you. And now I say, this is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black. Well, I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thanks for your company. Now, each week at this time, we have a PS, a pod script, where I ask this question, and I'll see if you know this answer. Caroline, what is the universal question?
Gosh, Lynn, how would I know?
Well, you're not alone. It's a very deep one. But I do know the answer.
Ah.
And it's an answer that's going to save the world. But I'm not going to share it. People say, well, for heaven's sakes, can't you save the world sooner? Well, but I want to build suspense. I go out on my bike and cross over Bragg Boulevard, and who knows what can happen. And so that's why I have the answer to this in safely in my safe deposit box in the Bank of America.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want that to be known, that the answer is this safely there. But it's the truth. And I have the answer. And but anyway, once again, thank you. Until next time.
All right. Thank you.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round, to be back where the boys all